On the Mic podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, I have actor and director Melanie Mayron. Melanie is best known for her work on the 1995 hit The Babysitter's Club. That was crazy to me that this movie is now celebrating its 20th anniversary. So I was only 11 years old when this came out. I remember all the Babysitter's Club books were quite the hit back in the day. And everybody, you know, all the girls that I was in school with, you know, were always reading those. Of course, as guys, you know, we had the Hardy Brothers, the Hardy Boys, and Encyclopedia Brown. I was never really interested in any of that. But I do remember the Babysitter's Club as being quite the iconic book at the time. And I vaguely remembered the movie. I went back and watched it before we did this interview. And it was fun. It made me really reminisce a lot. But most of all, it made me feel really, really old. And Melanie and I kind of joke about that at the beginning of this episode. It's crazy. You know, that's been 20 years since that movie came out and those books were such a huge hit. But it was a lot of fun talking with Melanie. She's worked on so many great shows. She does a lot of episodic television, aside from feature length, on hit shows like Pretty Little Liars, the Golden Globe winning Jane the Virgin, Switched at Birth. She's worked on just a ton of ABC Family shows. Right now, I know she's working on Grace and Frankie, I think is what it's called, on Netflix. And there's just a lot of great work that she's done. It was fun really talking to her, you know, kind of about how things, you know, the balance between film and television, kind of where she sees a lot of that going, and the difference between, you know, directing a feature-length film and directing episodic TV. It was also really cool kind of finding out, you know, how the Babysitter's Club impacted people over the years and how people still bring this up to her and talk to her about how it influenced them. She tells a really cool story about meeting Lena Dunham and you know, kind of how Lena even told her how that impacted her. So it was really cool talking with Melanie. I was really excited to talk to her, especially, you know, I knew her name right when I had been offered the interview. And as I kind of looked up her credentials, I was like, oh my gosh, she's worked on so many great things. So I think you guys will really enjoy this episode. You know, we talk a lot of filmmaking stuff on it. So, you know, if you're a film nerd, you're especially going to enjoy some of the insight from a director that's been working in the business for years and years. So a lot of great stuff here. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear mine and Melanie's conversation. This episode today is brought to you by Club at 50 West. If you've not been to Club at 50 West here in Salt Lake City, you've got to check them out. So much great entertainment, an amazing cafe, such a great staff. This last week I hosted the book event for Sean Wickard for his book Impossible, or So They Said, which, you know, chronicles the story that he went through as being one of the first in the world to receive a rare stem cell transplant from his own stem cells and help cure his paralysis and lupus. Of course, as many of you know, I've actually been filming the documentary with Sean that we called Sean Wickard Cursed and Cured. Kind of released our first little teaser trailer for that at the book event. And it's been very well received. Sean's book, everybody is just loving this book. So it's such an incredible story. And I'm so thankful for everybody that came out to Club at 50 West as I hosted this event. And check things out, especially to Bill Schaffenhauer and Brad Barton that were part of that event. They were amazing and their stories were just absolutely incredible. Brad also does a lot of magic. He tore apart a newspaper and put it back together. And almost a week later now, and I'm still trying to figure out how the hell he did it. It was such an amazing show. That was so much fun to be a part of. And the emotion in the room, especially right before Sean came out, as we showed a slideshow and part of the teaser trailer. And, you know, even though I edited the entire thing and put the entire thing together, it's still, you know, being in the moment, you know, seeing how Sean's story has impacted people. It was really incredible. So thank you to everybody that came out to that event. And make sure to go check out Club at 50 West. Check out their website. You know, they're always linked on our site. And go check them out and see everything that they have to offer. So many great comics coming through. Mark Curry is coming through in the next couple weeks here. I believe that's December 11th and 12th. Double check our website for the exact dates on that. But I'm thrilled to see him hanging with Mr. Cooper. You know, you can't go wrong there. So make sure you check out Club at 50 West. A lot of great events, too, that are going to be coming up here that are in the process of getting finalized. You're going to love these upcoming events. So make sure you check them out. Again, I hope you guys really enjoy this episode with Melanie Mayron. You know, again, if you grew up in the 90s, you know all about the Babysitter's Club. You know, it was a big part of your life. And you're going to love hearing some of the insight to this movie, as well as so many of the other shows that she's worked on. So enjoy this episode. Go check out Club at 50 West. Follow me on Facebook and Twitter at Tim Drake. You can also follow me on Instagram at TimDrake42. Love to hear from you guys. Also follow the podcast at On The Mic Podcast and visit the website onthemicpodcast.com for all the past episodes. Everything is linked up there. Enjoy this episode with Melanie Mayron. We'll be right back. today, Melanie.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
So I know when the publicist had first reached out to me, he's like, I know Melanie's name. Why do I know her name? And then I was like, oh, of course, the Babysitter's Club. And I mean, the 20th anniversary.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It was great.
So, I mean, how does that feel to, you know, be celebrating the 20th anniversary for the Babysitter's Club?
It was crazy because what was funny was all the girls, they were between the ages of like 10 and 15. After the two screenings, we all got to go to a bar and have a drink together. And then I was like, uh-oh, I got old.
I know it made me, I just went back through and watched the film again the other day because it's been years since I've seen it. And it made me feel incredibly old to remember. I mean, I was a kid when the movie came out, and I mean, the Babysitter's Club books were, you know, one of the biggest things out there. And it was a big part of my childhood, and then kind of reminiscing as I watched the movie again, I just kind of had to laugh, and I was like, oh, I'm getting old now.
Yeah, I know. What's up with that?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it, but...
I know. Oh, gosh.
So it's kind of crazy, too, to watch that back and see, like, Rachel Lee Cook and Bree Blair as kids in those movies and to see, you know, where their careers have gone now. So, I mean, would you ever have even begin to imagine that some of the careers that those girls would have gone on to have at that age?
I know, and they did, boy. But, you know, I can't tell you how many people we saw for that film. Because, you know, that age group, I mean, you have to get, like, 6-7 girls between the age of like 10 and 15. And what was tricky is, you know, that's when puberty kicks in. And so a lot of the girls came in and they were like maybe 14, but they looked, you know, 19. You know, it was sort of like, no. It depends when people mature. So it was sort of like catching that age, you know, it had to be right. It had to be kind of before all that, you know.
And I think you definitely captured it well. I know watching some of the boys in the film as they're, you know, trying to hit on the girls or trying to make their impression. I remembered being that goofy, awkward kid at that age, trying to not make a fool of myself. And I was just like, oh, this hits so close to home.
You know, one of the boys, when you make a movie, you shoot it, and then you have to edit it, and then they put all the sound and all the score, but one thing you always have to do sometimes is called ADR, additional dialogue recording. Or if there was noise when you were shooting and they couldn't hear the lines really well, you bring the actors back about 5 or 6 months after you've shot the film to add lines or to redo lines they said in a recording studio. And all the girls had to come back, and one of Austin, he had to come back with the boy that had a crush on Cody, and his voice had dropped within the time that we had shot the movie, and we were having to do the ADR, and he came there, he was speaking down here like this. I was like, oh no!
Oh, that
it sound like himself. It was like, I mean, he didn't sound like he sounded in the film. I was like, oh, you gotta drop your voice, you gotta raise your voice, you gotta try to.
Oh, that had to have thrown him for a loop, because I'm sure playing in the realm of even voice acting at that point probably wasn't in his playbook just yet.
No, but I remember I was like, gosh, what are we gonna do? What are we gonna do? Oh boy.
So I know as I had first started into film school a few years ago, we had to do some ADR on a shot that we had where the wind was just terrible. No matter what we did, we were just picking up a ton of wind, and it's almost comical to us to watch that scene back now, because the dialogue's just so perfect, but you can tell that the actor's hair is kind of flipping all over, and it's just like, there's no wind. There's no wind at all.
Yeah, right. It doesn't sound. It always sounds so good.
So now, was The Babysitter's Club, was that the first feature-length film that you had directed?
Yes, it was. I had actually done long-form movies, so they were two long movies, but they weren't in the theatrical release. One was, actually they were both for The Wonderful World of Disney on Sunday night. One was Freaky Friday, and it actually stars Shelley Long and Gabby Hoffman. Gabby plays the youngest sister right now in Transparent, but okay. She was 12 She was 12 at the time. And then I did Toothless, which was starring Kirstie Alley and Lynn Redgrave. So I had done both of those and then went right into the Babysitter's Club. But that was, you know, going to be in the theater.
So, and I know primarily, you know, as I was kind of looking over, you know, a lot of your work, you primarily do network television, episodic TV.
Yeah, well, because, you know, I've got an independent film I'm trying to raise money for. You know, the movies have gotten just much harder and harder to make. There are a lot of movie directors that are, you know, doing television now just because I think movies take so long to get made or to get through the studio pipeline these days. Just a lot of the studios are making, you know, the big, what they call tentpole pictures, you know, the big action films and superhero films and all the kind of more people stories, I think, are being made independently, and then studios are buying them when they're done.
So the studios are picking them up more on kind of the distribution side of it than the financier side of it initially.
Yeah.
So do you think some of the streaming with Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, do you think some of that's even affecting that to a greater degree now?
Yeah, I do. But there are a lot of, like, Steven Soderbergh is doing The Nick. You know, I mean, there are a lot of movie directors that are doing TV now.
So now, what is the greatest challenge, I mean, where you've jumped from feature films into television and back and forth? Well, what is the greatest challenge, you know, kind of going from, you know, the feature length to the episodic?
It's just episodic's got to be is a lot faster.
And with all the episodic that you've done, I mean, there are so many of just some of my favorite shows on air. I mean, for one, the Larry Sanders Show. I mean, you directed an episode of that. Dawson's Creek, Ed, which I laughed when I saw Ed on there because I feel like that show is so underappreciated.
Yeah.
that show is always, I've been a huge fan of that with Michael Ian Black and Tom Cavanaugh. So that, I've just loved that show. So I love seeing that you had directed an episode of that. But one that really caught my eye, and I know you even acted in an episode as well, what was Pretty Little Liars.
Yes.
So, and what has that experience been? I've actually been on the set once. I think the show was still on hiatus. And I was over at Warner Brothers and was able to kind of check things out there. And it's a really cool set.
Right.
They use a ton of the lot for the set.
Yeah, they have spent a lot of money. It's a wonderful show. Really, really wonderful. It was really fun. I had scenes with Lucy Hale. I played her photography teacher.
Yeah, I pulled it up, I was like, oh, I totally remember that episode and didn't realize that was you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was good. Really, really good. I'll tell you, you know, the episode of Ed, that was the week of 9/11, if you can believe it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I'll tell you one other interesting thing is I had directed an episode of Providence, and that show I hired a guy named John Hamm. It was the first thing he'd ever done on television. He had to play a bartender and then secretly be Zorro. It was like, oh my God, it was his first time, and he didn't know a lot about film acting, you know, acting in front of the camera, and I was sort of teaching him a lot of stuff, and I just thought it was hilarious, because when Mad Men first went on the air, I was like, I know him, why do I know him?
So everybody around the world can kind of thank you for John Hamm.
There you go.
So now, I noticed a lot of these, too, are some of the ABC Family shows as well, with The Fosters and Switched at Birth. Is it kind of a contractual thing now that you kind of have with ABC Family where you're working on a lot of their shows, or is it just kind of, you know, they've seen some of the work and you just keep, you know, working with their shows?
Well, yeah, I knew the producers, so some of them, you know, hired me. Right now I just did a Grace and Frankie for Netflix.
Okay.
I'm gonna be doing 4 Jane the Virgins this season, which is really fun, on the CW with Gina Rodriguez.
Yeah, and just won the Golden Globe last year too.
Yeah, that's right. The show that was on Monday night I directed, so that was fun. So, you know, but no, it's not a contract with ABC Family. What happens is you get the producers know you a lot of times. They know your work, or they've worked with you before. You know, they'll hire you again.
With, you know, working in the industry for so long and building such a great resume, I mean, what's some of the big advice that you would have to, you know, young filmmakers or those even in the industry that are trying to build their career?
Well, I think, you know, now more than ever with the whole digital world, you know, when I started, well, I went as an actress and then, you know, was able to direct on 30-something on a series. But at that time, you know, it was all film. And just to develop the role of film that you shot with a film camera, you know, cost money. Now you can shoot on your phone, you can shoot on a digital camera. It doesn't cost you anything except the memory card. And to shoot, you know, movies and get them developed, it all costs. And I think now people are, you know, you can even make movies on your on the new smartphones and stuff. So actually, the idea of making a film or making a short, you can do it a lot cheaper now than you did when I was, you know, acting and wanting to transition over. So I think it's sort of like make a short, write a short, make it so that people can see your talent, see what you do. And also when you do get to work professionally, if you do get to direct, or I think as a director, I would say go take an acting class so you know where actors are coming from, being an actor also. That helps if you're directing. And the other thing is be willing to compromise. Don't be so clinging to whatever it is you saw in your head before you get to the set, because things always change. That's the one thing you can count on. So you have to be flexible.
Yeah, especially with the compromise part, and I know when with the very little acting I've done, my producing partner, he continually just gets cast in bigger and bigger things. And the first thing he had told me was, you know, when he memorizes lines, that he reads things almost monotone so that he doesn't get in his head, you know, just a set way.
That's
so
right.
So that he can be able to go on set and let the director direct him and show them how they want that character.
That's right. Actually, Lee Strasberg had that as an exercise. It was to sort of learn your lines, and if you're saying them out loud, just to memorize them, say it like robotically, you know, like just like completely monotone. He's exactly right. So that way you don't have a line reading, you know, in your head, and you can hear it on set. Like a lot of times with kid actors, they just say it exactly the same over and over and over like that. They memorize the melody of that line.
With working with kid actors, you know, especially with the Babysitter's Club, where you had, you know, so many kids on that set, especially when they had their day camp and everything. I mean, were there a lot of struggles trying to wrangle all the kids on the set?
Well, it was. I mean, the kids were all, you know, off the set in rooms and in class. You know, there were social workers, but they still had to be schooled. I think the hardest thing about the Babysitter's Club was just the scheduling of it. Judy Bennett was our first AD, and she had apparently scheduled a lot of projects before that with children. So, because when you have kids under 18, you only have 9 hours a day to use them. So the whole schedule, as you know, because you're doing this kind of stuff, it really had to be worked out, you know, smartly, because there was a lot of work. And, you know, when they would call in, from the time the kid would be called to work, they had 9 hours. So you would stagger their calls during the day to make sure that you always had stuff to shoot, you know, and the kids available in the scenes at the right time.
So how many days did the shoot end up taking with being so restricted on the time?
It was 35 days.
So I mean, still, that's fairly quick, I mean, in terms of, I mean, it seems that that's pretty average for most feature films, would you say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a lot of independent films are being shot shorter than that, but, you know, big budget movies will have 40 days or 45 days or even longer.
Yeah, it's blown my mind when I hear, I think it's The Revenant that's coming out here in January, that I can't even remember how long they said, just in those frigid temperatures. The Revenant, the new Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
I think that one,
yeah.
I want to say they said it was like 60 days in just those frigid temperatures. And I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, no, that's rough.
Yeah, it would definitely be rough, but I mean, it looks amazing. So somehow they made it work with those harsh conditions.
Yeah.
So celebrating the 20th anniversary, do you guys have a lot of big events for this?
No, we just kind of had that screening in Austin, but it was just a wonderful sort of life marker. I mean, a lot of the girls hadn't seen each other since the movie, and it was really something. It was a great thing to be a part of, and it was very, very spontaneous. Skylar had invited me, and then before we knew it, everybody else was coming in, so it was great.
So was this put together a little bit more independently, or was the studio still behind kind of putting together the reunion of it?
No, I don't think the studio knew about it, but press agent was talking about maybe doing a big thing sort of nationally for the 25th and getting the studio involved, obviously. I mean, I ran into Lena Dunham, you know, who created the show Girls.
Yeah.
She actually lived down on my street for her L.A. place, and I ran into her on the street and said hello, and she looked at me and she said, "You directed a film that had such an impact on my life." And I looked at her, and I was doing the math in my head because I've only directed two features. Hey, I wonder what she's talking about. And then, right, and then before I could continue thinking, she said, "The Babysitter's Club." And she said it with such reverence. She said, "That movie meant so much to me." And I just thought that was amazing. And when I worked on Pretty Little Liars, the first one that I did, all those gals, when they heard I said, "Have you ever seen Babysitter's Club?" Oh, yeah, yeah. And I said, "Well, directed that," and they were, "Oh my god!" It just all of a sudden I was like, you know, I could see that I was going up a few notches in their mind.
Yeah, I mean, even though all of the girls on Pretty Little Liars are still, you know, pretty young. I mean, some of them I know are in their late 20s, early 30s, and still pull off that high school age really well.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it has to have been a big part of their youth as well. Still.
Yeah, it absolutely was.
So I thought one funny cameo that I had noticed in at least through the IMDb for the Babysitter's Club was Scarlett Palmers, who of course went on to star in Reba, but it came across her on the IMDb and I was like, wait, she was in the movie? And I realized she's just one of the little kids that's part of their day camp, and it made me laugh so hard because I was like, I never would have even noticed that was her, but she's gone on to do a lot of big things, and she was just a... She was just a, if anything, an extra kind of, as one of the kids on the show.
Wait, who was it? What was her name?
Scarlett Palmer is the actress, and she just the only shot I can even really think of is when they're taking all of the flowers to the greenhouse. At the very end, there's kind of a closer shot
on her. Yeah.
And it was the only time that I was like, oh, there she is, because I hadn't even noticed. But she was probably 4 years old or so in that. So she didn't have a big role or anything, but it was just funny when I came across her name on the IMDb, because it's like even somebody that was a fairly insignificant role for that movie still went on to do a lot of great stuff.
Right.
So, Melanie, it has been an absolute pleasure talking with you. I wish we had more time with you. I know you've got a bunch of these things that you're doing, but it's been a pleasure, you know, kind of learning a little bit about this film and learning about some of the other features and stuff that you've worked on.
Right. Well, thanks, Tim, and thanks for taking the time.
Awesome. Well, you have a great rest of your day, Melanie. Thank you so much.
All right. Okay, you too. Bye.